Oh my God. I just looked at your names. Fucking hell. Jesus Christ. How's it going? Fuck
All
me.
right,
yeah, I'm all right. I was just, jeez, boys, it's been a while.
It's been a while.
A long time. 20 plus years.
No, I think the last time we saw each other was a download, like.
Oh, yeah. Is it like
8, 9 years ago?
Ridiculous.
And we were.
Yeah, go on.
We literally, like, so when we saw the album was coming out, we were like, right. So we got onto Hannah. I was like, Hannah, we went to school with Khan.
Yeah.
Can you get us talking to him?
Yeah.
And here we are.
Amazing. Fucking hell. Like, that took me a little bit too long. I apologize for that, but like, fuck.
School was a long time ago, man. A lot has happened since then.
Damn. Yeah, a lot has. A lot has.
How have you been?
Oh, dude, fuck. I mean, it's been such a long time. That's a crazy question to, like, sum up in, you know, in a short space of time. But yeah, you know, I can't complain. You know, life's treated me well. You know, I live in Bristol now. Like, you know, everything's going good. You know, got like a house, missus, two dogs, and kind of living that life.
Mate.
So yeah, you know, no complaints in that sense. Yeah. How about you? Are you got still around the pool area, or what's the crack?
good. I'm in Dublin now.
Oh, lovely. Nice.
And I'm up in Edinburgh. So,
oh, good, good. You guys
very well dispersed.
Yeah. Good.
we were only in, we were out tangent there 2 weeks ago in your neck of the woods.
Yeah. Amazing festival.
I couldn't go
this year, but like, yeah, such a good festival. Like, good vibes and all around.
Like, I was just like, you've been a few bands since then, but like the first time we sort of heard music together was like at J-Fest. And and for people listening, for context, I should say, actually, we went to school together many years ago.
Yes.
And our mate had this house with a huge bit of land on and just did like a local festival with like Venny's band played back in the day. What were you called then? Joe Jacima?
Reborn. Reborn days.
Nice. Yeah, I remember like I don't know, like a pallet style stage or something like that. And then just like a PA running off of, I don't know if it was like a generator or something, but it was like super cobbled together and then just that was, man, that's a long time ago now. Like,
and I remember you did Freebird as
good memory here, Jerry. I'm quite impressed that you didn't have too many beard at oars.
Obviously not, that
never happens. Fuck, man, yeah, that's a long time ago. I mean, I mean since then, man, yeah, things have changed drastically, but yeah,
our musical careers have diverged a little bit since then.
But it's crazy that we can come back now, you know, like it's insane actually.
It's nice actually being able to chat to an old friend because it's quite relaxed. Like, you sort of feel like we can be very open in this interview where, you know, we've known each other for so long, albeit we're reunited now. So
new
album.
Yes, yeah. Thank you. Good plug.
Yeah. This Place Only Brings Death.
Yes.
Is fairly bleak. Title, go on, talk to us, what's the meaning behind it?
Well, it's kind of everything I try to write, I like to have layers to. So like, you could take that just on by reading the, you know, the words and it's quite a bleak statement, but ultimately it's a statement towards like life. You know, everything comes to an end, there's no escaping it. You know, our life has like a certain length of time, you know, whatever you believe in, whatever your, you know, whatever your kind of thoughts are, everything comes to an end. And ultimately, the earth, our life, this place only brings death. And it kind of came basically like when, I don't want to talk about like the pandemic because I'm fucking sick of it basically. But like, you know, like when it came to kind of being creative again, I couldn't write anything that was like positive. Like everything that was came out, like there was just, I couldn't, like everything that was coming out was just like dark. Like I was either in my own head or I was like you know, reflecting on what had happened within society and stuff like that. You know, like it was just nothing came out positive. So I was like, okay, cool. I'm going to lean into it, try to make it a bit more like poetic and start, and try to like, rather than just being like, oh, you hate you, you know, like that sort of stuff, like trying to make it just a bit more interesting. And yeah, we ended up hitting on like, this was like maybe the third or fourth track that could ended up being like finished. When we ended up with the title, it was like, oh yeah, fuck, okay, cool. And then as it just spiraled and spiraled from there, basically. So yeah, it was just a bleak outlook on life, basically.
And the album cover is fairly straightforward, but quite daunting at the same time.
Yeah.
Is that the impact you're looking for?
Kind of. Like the album artwork wasn't really... we basically gave like a brief to like a designer, and he sent back a few different things with different like color schemes and stuff like that. And as soon as we saw the like, I don't know, the figure and the black and red, we were like, that's the one. Like everyone, I mean, it's a classic like metal thing, isn't it? Like just like black and red. But like when we saw it, everyone was like, yeah, that's actually spot on. And then we kind of did a few little edits to make, you know, with the circle and stuff like that to try and bring it together a little bit more. But yeah, it all came from someone else actually.
And is this your second album with the band now?
Yes, my second, and the band's fifth total. So
yeah. And how have you, I mean, obviously two albums cycle is quite a long time, but how has it been, you know, because you were in Monuments before?
I filled in for Monuments like just for a little bit of time, and then before that was No Consequence. But for this album, like the whole process was pretty quick. Basically we got a new guitarist in, a guy called Dan Thornton, who is someone we knew from kind of the scene and different bands and stuff like that. And he came in and just basically like tore up everything that we were doing before and was just kind of like, nah, I'm kind of like, let's try doing this. And everyone was like, okay, cool. Like this is, it's definitely like the band needed something new. Like, because what the disconnect, the album before was trying to do was take the old sound, but bring me into the old sound. And it worked at points, but sometimes it really didn't. And like, I still listen back and I'm super proud of it, but there's still points where I'm like, ah, fuck. Like it just didn't quite gel as much as I wanted. And this time round, yeah, Dan was just brought in all these different elements. Like he's super into his like analog synth and kind of like all of that sort of, I don't know, weird nerdy stuff in that sense. And it brought a completely different layer to the band. And when we kind of ended up trying to put these songs together, it was more like he'd learned kind of what Heart of a Coward was about and just kind of taken it to a different sort of place. And in terms of like the creative process, it just made it so smooth. Because ultimately like V, Noddy and Carl could imprint the Heart of a Coward sound onto what Dan was writing. And it just made it super easy for me to kind of write what I do over the top. And then there was input from the guys on top of that and stuff. So in terms of an actual creative process, it was really smooth in comparison to the last album. But the thing that we really suffered with was, getting that creative spark back. Like we, you know, like again, yeah, we basically lost pretty much everything through the pandemic. A lot of us worked within the music industry as well and lost jobs, had to change like completely. And it took a while to really get kind of back into the groove of it. And that's, yeah, ultimately Steve, a member, left due to kind of his own reasons and stuff like that. And yeah, we were like, if we're going to do this again, we need something fresh and we need to change. And ultimately, I think we've kind of delivered that really.
Benny?
Can I just pick up a couple of points that you kind of alluded to already, Carl? Like,
yeah.
How has it been? I mean, I don't want to drone on about the pandemic. I'm sure everyone's spoken enough about it. But
yeah.
My understanding is you joined the band relatively, it's relatively quick then into the pandemic. How has that affected how you bedded in and everything else?
I mean, in terms of like bedding in, like the social aspect, like it wasn't really a problem. Like we kind of knew each other, had played shows together with like my old band and stuff, so like we kind of like knew of each other and stuff. And in terms of like, yeah, the social aspect, it wasn't a real problem. And you know, we got a fair bit of touring in before the pandemic, and I don't know. I think, I, if anything, like the, and this is without sounding too cheesy, like even though we completely lost our creative drive, like we were still hanging out and still doing a lot together throughout the pandemic, but everyone was just like, what the fuck is going on? No one really knew when things were going to end, when, you know, whatever was going on. So, you know, like in terms of bedding in, like, I didn't really have a problem with the, with it at all. Like, you know, creatively again, like I'm kind of quite open and, you know, as in I can be quite direct in a sense, like just to be, if I don't like something, I can voice it and I can tell someone why and offer, you know, different ideas. Or if someone doesn't like what I've done, you know, as long as they can approach it in the same way, I'm more than happy to change things, you know? So being open like that was something I brought to the table and the guys didn't have before. Like it was very much instrumentation and vocals. And it was like separate. There was no discussing it at all. So like, yeah, having that kind of helped really help, like, yeah, helped kind of gel us as a creative unit as well. So.
And you kind of did have some time to tour the Disconnect after it was released. And we certainly saw you play that big show at Download, but yeah. Then you did have that interruption. Do you think it kind of stifled the momentum a little bit?
So yeah, 100%.
You kind of joining the band and everything else?
Yeah, 100%. Like we were on tour in March 2020. Like we played London, I think, around the 10th of March or something. And then the UK shut down around like the 20th or something. Like as it was super quick, but like when we were going through Europe, like they were shutting venues, shutting borders as we were going. Like we had to just kind of, we got through France like by the skin of our teeth, got into the UK, everyone's wearing masks, you got like, you know, all this sanitizer everywhere, get into the UK and everyone's like, ah! In the pub, like, oh, like we played these UK shows and it was like, oh my god, there's like, you know, people were super cautious at the European shows, like standing away from you and stuff. And in England, everyone's like hugging you and stuff. And it was just like, what the actual fuck is going on? Like, so yeah, in that sense, like it was, yeah, that was a bit of a shock. But yeah, and then obviously everything kind of stopped. And we had, you know, different plans for the rest of the year. And, you know, as you do, you kind of have like a whole cycle and yeah, a plan that you're kind of supposed to be working through. But yeah, then that just got put on hold. And then on hold and delayed and then just cancelled and, you know, all the rest of it that happened from there. Yeah, but I don't know if that answered that question.
Yeah. I mean, it kind of was a huge disruption for everyone. But yeah, it clearly, just as you were hitting your straps with the new band, it comes along. And then I just wondered how that affects you. But we've got a bit to catch up on after all these years. Do you mind talking a bit about your previous band, No Consequence, and what that transition has been like to the new band?
Yeah, I mean, well, so No Consequence is like, you know, some of my closest friends, like we're still very good friends now. And that was way more like techier, way more melodic. They weren't necessarily, not as heavy in that sense. So it was a lot more based around, you know, like singing melody and stuff and then screaming for like a little, you know, here and there sort of thing. Like, not here and there, but as in like, it just was nowhere near as screaming heavy. So I think the main difference was really being comfortable, like screaming more. And that kind of, that I wish I could have had, basically I had like, we wrote the album, recorded it. And then like, I wish I could have had like a tour or something to just do before the recording of the album to then really like feel a bit more like comfortable with it now. Like as in where I am now to where we were when we recorded The Disconnect is like miles apart. Like, and I can say that like myself, you know, I can see that myself, but that's because I've had like the time to kind of do it. Whereas it was like, cool, we did one single straight into recording the album, played like four shows, recorded the album and then toured it. And it was just kind of like, I wish I could have done it the other way around, you know, just toured it and then done the album. But yeah, in terms of the difference between No Consequence, like that's very much like a bedroom band that kind of got out of hand. I know Heart of a Coward is like a bedroom band that got out of hand as well. But like, you know, No Consequence, we was trying to do everything as cheap as possible. Like we had our own, like had our own van that we just used to drive around and sleep on people's floors and kind of just doing it like the fun way. And that kind of taught me so much. Ultimately there was a big change in I don't know the size of the band, but professionalism going from No Consequence up to Heart of a Coward, it was quite a steep learning curve for sure.
When you just, joined, sorry.
That's right.
Just one more follow up on that, if you don't mind, Joe. Taking over from Jamie Graham, like he is very revered in the UK scene as a vocalist. Obviously, Time in Silosis is very kind of venerated. How did you feel kind of stepping into those shoes and stepping up?
First of all, like I was honored that the guys actually chose me. You know, like it was very surreal at times. I'm not going to speak about like what happened, why it happened, but ultimately there were reasons for whatever went on. I have no problem with Jamie. I think he's an incredible vocalist. I've learned so much from just learning his style. He has strengths that aren't my strengths. And I, you know, like as in ultimately he was a screamer, like I am not a singer. I'm a singer and it's more, and then learning more about the screaming side of stuff. So the guys knew what they wanted. They knew they needed a change. It was a challenge, but something I never shy away from a challenge. So I'm more than happy to push myself and learn and kind of progress. So yeah, I really enjoyed it. And I feel like I'm in a way better place with the old stuff and to be able to bring that into the new stuff as well. So.
And sorry, my question, Fanny, sorry to cut across you there, was when you joined Heart of a Coward, how much input did you have in the writing of the albums, or was it a sort of settling in process?
Not at all. What part of the audition process was doing like a 2-minute track on a new track. And the idea was that you'd work together with them to see the kind of creative aspect. And it was really that first demo when that kind of went back a few times. And then when we kind of settled on something and I was like, oh shit, this actually sounds fucking good. It turned out to be Drown in Ruin off of The Disconnect. In that sense, like, no, like I straight in, like I said before, like if I'm in a band, if I'm creating music with people, I'm not just going to sit there and go like, cool, you write, you know, like I know my strengths. I know what I can bring to the table. So I tend to go like, listen, I need a chorus here. Do you know what I mean? It's basically is what I'm saying, you know, like, so like, it's kind of, that's kind of how it worked, and trying to get them to understand that, you know, what's like, how to create space. Like I said to them, like, where we need to be Linkin Park on steroids. And that's what I think we finally achieved now. Like, but that's kind of what we didn't quite get to, but we're there now for sure.
Would you have much impact in terms of like the music as well, being like, I don't like that riff, I don't like this drum feel, whatever?
I mean, I'm not a musician. Like, as in, I can play the guitar, I can play the drums.
Yeah.
But I cannot play them for anywhere near as what I would need to do to be able to like hold down, like even play a Heart of a Coward song. But I can like vocalize my ideas or say like, you know, I don't know, this needs to be like halftime, or like this is too intricate. Can you, you know, like I can try and get some sort of idea across to try and, you know, say, you know, get if I'm strongly against something, then yeah, sure. But I mean, most of the time, the guys are really good at like bouncing off each other, whittling things down, you know, changing things before we even hear it as a full band. You know, like they're very good at kind of they've been doing it long enough, like to kind of get to the good shit. You know what I mean? Like to cut a song down, make sure it's working. Like, you know, that's kind of, yeah, I do have a lot of input on stuff, but like, I'm nowhere near an accomplished musician to be able to actually like play it back to them or anything, you know? So,
yeah, yeah. And just coming back to the touring piece, like, so pre-COVID, like, touring was good. Mm-hmm. Plenty of bands are out there. Now it really has a lot of bands, like, take Anthrax, for example, have cancelled 2 or 3 times in UK because they just said, we can't afford it. So mm-hmm. for a band like yours, like Heart of a Coward, I mean, I know you've got a couple of festivals coming up soon. Mm-hmm. Like, have you seen a significant impact for a band of, like, Heart of a Coward, or is it sort of maintained the same?
We've only really played like a couple of shows since releasing this new stuff. We've got a full European tour coming up at the end of September throughout October. And that'll be like the real test. I mean, ultimately just as a music fan, I've noticed the difference more than anything. Yeah. You know, like, and I'm guessing that's going to translate to, you know, we're not the hugest band in the world. I'm not expecting thousands of people or anything like that. But like, you know, I'm sure there's going to be a note, like, as in there is a noticeable difference. You know, like, there's people are, you know, well, there's more costs on the actual logistical side of touring. Like, I'm going to say the B word, but Brexit really hasn't helped with all of that. But then also, like, COVID hasn't helped with that. You know, the industry as itself, the live music industry, is struggling, especially with venues and stuff. And, you know, even transport and things has doubled basically in cost. So, you know, it's a challenging time all round, unless you're, I don't know, Ed Sheeran or like Bad Omens or something like that, you know, when you're just selling out like all this stuff. But then, I don't know, that's the flip side to it. You know, people are getting really invested in bands like Spirit Box, Sleep Token, all that stuff that can just appear, that just seem to sell out instantly. Whereas, you know, it's quite, it does feel like a bit of a grind at the kind of lower levels, but, you know, it always has been. It's just, I think people are a bit more, I don't know, not wary because of COVID, but maybe, I don't know, cost of living, all sorts of stuff. Like, there's so many different factors that you just can't, like, yeah, it's not the same as it was before, but I can't tell you what it is like now, you know, like, until we go and do it, really. So,
yeah, I mean, like you were saying, like, the likes of Metallica, Maiden, Slipknot, they're going to be fine, no problem. But you really are seeing, like, a lot of bands pulling out and, like, shows not filling up because of that COVID scare. I mean, I remember the first show after COVID, I went to see Unto Others in Dublin.
Yeah.
Who were like, went on to support Behemoth and stuff. There was maybe 50 people there because they're wary, which is a real shame. And like the merch, the venues taking merch cuts as well.
Yeah.
It is killer. Like, have you had to deal with any of that?
Not yet. Well, no, not yet. But we'll have to wait and see kind of what happens on this run. But, you know, again, like, I don't agree with it at all, but most of the venue cuts, the merch cuts come from the bigger venues, like the O2s and stuff like that. Like, all your smaller independent ones don't tend to do that because they understand how much it actually affects the artists. So, you know, it's like, I don't know. It's quite an American thing. Like, it's been happening in the States for years. Like, and now for it to filter over to the UK is kind of annoying, but it comes with the fact that, you know, companies like O2 and things like that are buying up all these different venues, turning them into academies, and then going like, oh, hang on a minute, you're making however many grand a night, and you know, like, that sort of stuff is just, they're just trying to make more money because ultimately their venue's struggling as well. So I understand it, but I also think it's fucking shit. You know, like, because it's not like the bands can go and ask for percentages from the bar or anything like that. Yeah. You know, like, they're not going to do that. Like, so ultimately, I don't know, if it comes to a situation where we're you know, that happens to us, I just wouldn't sell merch. I'd just be like, come and buy it from the back of the van after the show. Like that, you know, like, fuck you. would be my solution.
Totally,
like,
fair.
You know,
totally,
like, because I'm not going to pay whatever. The thing is, it's not even like 10%. Like, it's like 30%, 25%. Like, and that can make a real, like, you know, if you think you've got an agent, management, you know, you got all your touring costs anyway, like, you're only really getting like 40%, 50% max of what you turn over. Like, if that, and then, you know, if you're trying to make money, trying to be full-time, you've got to split that between five people, blah 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 blah, you know, all of that sort of stuff. So it's kind of like, yeah, they're just trying to squeeze every penny out of it, because everyone's struggling. But it's just shit, basically.
And are you full-time?
No.
Okay, so you are actually holding down jobs.
So everybody has like flexible-ish jobs, you know, that they're able to kind of either work remotely or whatever to kind of whilst we tour, or kind of take time off, and they kind of understand what the situation is. But yeah, I mean, it was quite quite clear from the get-go, you know, as in even in previous bands, like, you're in a niche of a niche, you know, of a niche. You're making an extreme type of music, you know. It's very rare that you'll be able to sustain five people, you know, to make a living. Say you just want to earn 20 grand, that's 100k profit a year, you know, like, and that's a lot of touring, you know, that's a lot of, like, that's a lot. And ultimately, like, you know, everyone loves their creature comforts, and we've got a great balance where we can still live that life, still kind of play those shows, live, you know, have that as a incredible experience, but ultimately, like, you have to have the side hustle. You have to have something that supports you, you know, because things like the pandemic come along, you know, you could be full time and smashing it, but then that all just disappears and then you're screwed. You know, that's why people have taken up stuff like Twitch and things like that, because it's just a massive revenue that wasn't really there previously. Well, it was there, but as in like, it didn't have such a global reach until the pandemic, you know? But yeah, I know a lot of bands that even when they're full time, they're doing little things on the side, whether it's like production, whether it's, I don't know, whatever, like working in the music industry, doing different things, freelancing and stuff like that. So, you know, it's quite hard again, unless you're selling out Wembley or whatever, to kind of really make a decent living from it anyway.
And Khan, you can correct me if I'm wrong here. I read somewhere that you once worked as a tour manager and you alluded to working in the industry before.
Yeah.
What did you learn through doing that job? And what experience have you kind of brought back to your own band in terms of how to tour smarter or better?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question. I mean, yeah, so I worked as like a freelance, like tour driver, tour manager, merchandise, like basically anything I could do to just stay on the road, like pretty much, and just try to get as many skills as possible and just try and learn from that. And there's always smart things you can do, you know, like for this tour, for example, we're going to get our merch printed in Poland because of first of all, the exchange rate, the costs are way cheaper. Just get it couriered to the first venue rather than getting it printed in the UK, carrying it over with you. All of these sorts of things, you know, there's little things that you can do to try and save money. And ultimately, like, it just helps you kind of be a bit more, I don't know, resourceful. You can be a bit calmer in different situations, you know, like it's like everybody's been doing in the band has been doing this long enough that they're all kind of comfortable touring. You know, we're not kids just sinking a bottle of Jack Daniels and going mental every night. You know, it's kind of like everyone's kind of wants to, you know, go get coffee, see the cities and things like that. So if anything, it's kind of been, you know, touring full time as a job. And knowing all of these different cities and being like, okay, cool, like we're going to be in Prague. Oh, let's go here. You know, like it's given me more of like, maybe not something that I've applied to the band, but just to life, like being able to be in a different culture, in a different city, not speak a single word like of what they say, be that ignorant English person that has to speak to them in English and they just don't know what you're saying. And that is a humbling experience, you know, like as in, and that, like, I can't do the whole like, slower and louder thing. Like it's so embarrassing when people do that. Like, but if anything, like, yeah, being in those situations has really helped me appreciate like other cultures, other ways of living, you know, like not everything is as, I don't know, not straightforward. That's the wrong way of putting it, but you know, like it's just, I really enjoy that whole process of just being able to be somewhere, like not really know anything and just kind of like trying to figure it out using City Mapper, see where you can get to, you know, like try not to get lost, try not to get arrested. And yeah, that's kind of
especially probably... in Prague.
Yeah, Randy, Prague is dangerous. Prague Randy is dangerous. Yeah, yeah.
Did you not get a GCSE French with Mr. Hobbs? No.
Yes, I did, and it served me so well.
Mr. Hobbs has served
I live near, yeah, j'habite au bord de la mer or something like that. I live near the seaside. I don't live near the seaside anymore. Yeah, no, it's absolutely pointless. Probably some of the best like stuff I picked up is just touring with, European bands, foreign bands, whatever you want to call them, and all they do is teach you the swear words, and it's just amazing, you know. Like, so that's about it.
Danny, I'm going to come to you quickly before we ended up this album like, well,
Friday?
4 days ago?
Yeah, yeah.
What Friday day is it? Yeah, anyway, whatever. Have you listened to it much? I've had it on about 4 times. And we're going to do a full review, Khan, on the show in the future. But, Benny, this isn't really, fair to say, is not our wheelhouse and more of yours. So what have you thought of the album? Not to spoil it for Khan.
Yeah, I'm sure Khan will want us to do this, is to bring it back to the new record, and we will. So one thing that certainly stuck out for me is the track Decay, and it sits right in the middle of the album. It feels just a little bit different to everything else, and dare I say, a bit more calm, just in terms of its style and certainly your vocals and everything about it. So that track sticks out to me in a very good way, and I just wondered if you wouldn't mind talking to that track a little bit, and also what interested me somewhat about it is its track placement within the album, how it sits in the middle. I mean, there'd be a very natural tendency for a track like that to be the final track. So I was just interested in how you tracked the album.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, so Decay, from a songwriting perspective, basically I've had this idea. I've always been trying to do this. It's like writing like a haiku that's like super bleak, but super like positive and like, you know, trying to like just show like the beauty in death, ultimately in decay. Like that's kind of what I managed to get within this song, like three or four lines but that repeat throughout the song, but with different phrasing, different melodies, you know, like a different things like that. But ultimately it's the same four or five lines. And I really like, it took me a while to get, but when I got it, I was just like, beautiful. And I knew this song already, something that Dan had written. But it only really came together when we got into the studio with George Lever, because it was basically it just came out sounding like, it was the first, like when you're in the studio, things can go like super smooth. You're just smashing through tracks and then you're going to reach something that's going to be a wall, like something's just going to go bam. And you're just like either fucked on creativity. You can't do what you had in your head. It just doesn't sound right. It's not working, not gelling. And this was actually the first song that we came to. And it was like, fuck, it's just not working. And ultimately it took like, me and George were just bashing our heads trying to get like through these ideas, understanding the placements, why this wasn't working. And basically it was just the delivery of what I was trying to do. And ultimately what we did, just got a little bit high, stuck on loads of like reverb and vibes. And I just sung the chorus like super quiet and just chill and was just like, oh, hang on, we've got something here. And then just like rolled with it, turned the lights down, got the vibes in. And then it was just, it literally clicked like that. And it was just like, you know, just one of those moments when you're just like, oh shit. And you just put it on and it just washes over you. And you're just like, that's what it needed. Like, cause it was kind of, we're trying to hit people with it and it wasn't working. And it, when we kind of took that like little vibe check and came back to like help it, yeah, wash over people, like was such a, yeah, a real like creative, like, yeah, I don't know, tap. You know what I mean? You just like got that blocker out of the way and it just opened and it was like, bam, okay, cool. Now we know what to do with the rest of the song. But then everything kind of fell into piece, into place. And then when it came to like the track listing, again, that was just a matter of like, we wanted to, just trying to think about how it, so yeah, essentially with the track listing, everybody just listened to all of the demos before we even got into the studio and was like, this is what I think the track listing should be. This is what I think the track. And everyone was kind of like, cool, cool, cool. I mean, there were certain things that everybody agreed on, like the open and the finish, everybody agreed on. And then essentially what we wanted to do was like for the album to dip and pick up, like, and it kind of does that. Like, and, it does, and we were like, yeah, okay, yeah. So where's going to be that lull, that vibe? And we were like, okay, cool. Like when it came to actually tracking, everyone was like, right, decay, cool. So we know what to do. We can go up, bring it back down and then bring it back up. And then ultimately the last track as well, All Life Is Finite, I wanted to link together all the way around to This Place Only Brings Death. And that's kind of what like the kind of end motif background into the whole thing. So it's like it's the loop of life, you know, it's the snake that eats its tail. Like it kind of keeps going around. You meet that person again and then they leave and they come back and they leave. Like that's kind of the idea with it. So
it's very fascinating to get that insight into the creative process there. Yeah. That's really interesting.
Yeah. It was a fucking ball ache.
What I like about this album is that one, it from the first track, it is straight in your face and it is out of the blocks, boom. But also I this album doesn't outstay its welcome for me. Was there many tracks you cut off that left in the studio, or was it like
No, we went in with 14 wow. tracks. And four didn't make the cut, which was fair. Like but again working with with George Lever for this album, he was like, cut the shit and get to the point. Like what is this track about? That's what he kept asking, like what is the purpose of the track? So like This Place Only Brings Death is just about getting in your face. slamming in your face. And he was like, it just needs to go boom, boom, down, straight in. Like, and it was just, that's exactly what it does. Like, yeah. And it just gets to the point. And it's like, so what's the high point of this song? It could be a chorus. It could be a beat down. It could be something, you know, like whatever it was, it could be the riff. And he's like, okay, cool. Then that's what you're focusing on. And everything else was like, he just trimmed sections off, come back and be like, okay, cool. I've rearranged this. Like, what do you think about that? And everyone would be like, sort of thing. Like, but ultimately you take, he was like, songs don't need to be 5 minutes long. Like, you're not going to be doing 14 minute prog fucking extravaganzas, you know, like, he's like, no, nobody wants that. Like, everyone's listening to singles nowadays. I mean, obviously some people do want that. I enjoy that as well myself, but
yeah,
like,
yeah.
You know, like, but like, you know, people are listening to singles. You just need to fucking hit them, get to the point, give them the chorus, give them the beat down, break their neck at a live show, job done. Like, and he was like, well, how is it going to translate live? You know, like, that was another big part as well. Like, you know, it's a little, I would say playing wise, like for the guys, it might be a little bit simpler, but there's still plenty of intricacies within the playing, within the other tracks of the album. But the singles for sure were just more designed about like, right, what's going to cause a pit? You know, what are people going to go mental? Are they going to sing this back? You know, like all these different things that we kind of thought about before, but really hadn't like trimmed the fat essentially. And that's kind of what, because I think the album's only like 35, 36 minutes or something like that. So it just kind of gets it done, gets there, it's over. And, you know, it's kind of, again, I don't know, again, if you want to look at it with a philosophical side, it's kind of like your life in the grand scheme of things. It's just a small little drop. It's done. And then you're off. You know what I mean? Like, it's kind of.
And you can listen to it again. Like, yeah, you say, exactly. At the start.
Yeah, exactly.
Back to front.
Yeah.
You are dead right, though. I think, especially with streaming services these days, people's attention spans, because it's there at your fingertips, some bands do need to really keep it simple, and you do lose listeners sometimes by having 15-minute prog tracks, unless you're Opeth, of course, that's the exception. But yeah, you're dead right. And this, look, I'll fully admit, this is not my wheelhouse, but I really like the fact that it is 36 minutes long, plenty of variation in the album as well. It's not just one style, like, mm-hmm. There's lots to sort of dip in and out. And I think very bang on with the track Decay, like, perfect placement in the album, and it's sort of like a breather, if you will.
Yeah. It's kind of what it was like designed for. That's why it's there. You know what I mean? It's the lull, it's the chill bit in the middle. So
And the album's out on the 21st.
22nd of September? 22nd of September.
Okay, cool. Glad you're here to clarify that.
Yeah.
And you've got, I think you've got a European festival in Germany.
So we've got a full European tour coming up that starts on the 29th of September. So we're kind of doing like the main majority of Europe. The festival is within that. It's called Euroblast. And then, yeah, we're playing, we're doing London. We're doing like a UK run as well that finishes in London all together. We've got support from The City Is Ours and Ghost Iris. I don't know if you guys have come across that, or if you're into your kind of metalcore or anything like that. But yeah, two great bands, just buzzing to kind of get back out on the road and see how everything fares up post-COVID. So, you know, we'll see.
Are you doing anywhere near Scotland?
No, we're not. No. Unfortunately, no. We're working on doing another like headline run at the beginning of next year to be able to kind of hit all the other markets so we couldn't miss. Because otherwise we'd just be on tour for like 6 weeks. And it was just good. Like, as in, if we wanted to play everywhere, it's just like, yeah, it's not really feasible for everybody. We're doing this run. And then, yeah, we're working on kind of putting something else together to kind of hit the other spots that we couldn't do, especially in the UK. So,
yeah. Oh, Venny, there you go. You'll have to be the roving reporter on that show.
I will, Edinburgh. Yeah. Definitely, if it comes near Glasgow, I'll be there.
Yeah, nice.
Venny, unless you have anything else, mate, we'll let
you. No, Khan, thank you very much for your time, man.
Guys, no, thank you. That was such a surprise. I was like, and you were like,
it must be quite confusing.
I was like, I really don't. And I looked at your name and was like, oh my God. It was just like, yeah, that absolutely clicked then. But boys, thank you. Like, genuinely, like, that's actually made my day. Like, but yeah, thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you. So long since we talked. It's nice to be sort of just catching up and talking about your band. It's really nice. Listen, man, best of luck with the tour and the album release. Like I said, we'll be doing it on the show, so you can listen to it then. and what we really think of it instead of sat here. No, I'm joking. but yeah, listen, thanks again. Until we meet at the next festival, we'll see you on tour.
Nice one. All right, guys.
Take care, man.
Thank you very much.